Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
And welcome back to today's episode of Bridge the Gap podcast. We could not be more excited. We are filming, or actually, yeah, we're filming and recording audio here at the NIC conference in Dallas, Texas. Josh's hometown. My growing up hometown, my home state, and we have an amazing guest on today. Coming back is Amanda Cavallari, and she is an amazing world traveler. She is an advocate for aging and for the workforce, and there is a multitude of topics that we're going to go into, But today, we're going to be centering in on intergenerational living or multi-generational living. And my co-host, Joshua Crisp, has a lot to say on that, too. So it's going to be an exciting show. So, Josh, we're here at the NIC conference. We had a lot of meetings. We're burning it from both ends, basically. What do you think about this topic in particular?
Yeah, so it's something that there is a lot of buzz about in the industry right now. A lot of people are talking about it because a lot of people don't understand it. A lot of people, well, just what you said. Do you call it multi-generational?
Right.
Do you call it intergenerational? And what the heck does that mean? So, you know, I think it's fun because there's not any cookie cutter to follow when you start talking about designing for this. Intergenerational, multi-generational kind of means the same thing. Amanda and I were talking just before we started this. What is the difference? And, you know, multi-generational, I think we both kind of agreed that's more dealing with the housing and design spatially. And on the intergenerational, that's more like programmatic, but essentially the same principle, bringing the old, young together to live and work together. So excited to have Amanda here. This conference is super exciting. You're exactly right. It's all out, 100% go time from early in the morning to late at night, meeting some incredible people, but you feed off of everyone's energy. There's a ton of energy here. I'm excited that people are talking about intergenerational and people are thinking that that's what's next,
sure.
Right? There's a lot of talk about affordability, and I think intergenerational is a component to help programming, housing services be more affordable.
Right.
So yeah, it's exciting.
Well, and the exciting part about this is that we get to record this now in 2018, and we're going to look back at this. We can pull this recording because we are going to be, you two are going to be historically correct, right? Like today at the NIC conference, people may be talking about it, but it's not front and center because there's not people that are that forward thinking, and because it's complicated from the capital side to the operational side, and people in general may want to take the path of less resistance, the old model, the traditional model, but it's broken and it's not going to be sustainable because there's affordability issues and there's just better ways to do this. And so I'm looking forward in, I don't know how long, to pull this podcast back up and listen to it and just listen to how right you both are.
Well, so. That's really kind. I hope that you are correct in that forecast. And based on, you know, what we're hearing, you're exactly right. There's a lot of tough questions to answer. Mm-hmm. Particularly, you touched on the funding side. I've been talking, speaking with people today. Lenders, they're excited because it's different. It's not the vanilla that's out there right now. They believe it's next, but they're just like we are. We don't know how we're going to stack this to be a model that we can duplicate, but they're willing to work, and so we're excited about it. I'm excited to hear your perspective, Amanda. I mean, you have been doing some super exciting things. I think things that we're just jealous of, like all these places that you're getting to travel. You've already been with us on one podcast from Italy. Just super excited to have you with us. I want you to be able to tell people again about your passion project. I kind of feed off of your energy and constantly love picking your brain. So maybe just tell us a little bit, frame what you're doing with Connect the Ages, what you've been doing on the film tour, and then tell us about multi-generational, intergenerational, and what you're trying to do.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back. This is my second podcast in my life. So you all are 2 out of 2.
Awesome. So special.
I feel special. So thank you so much. And then thank you, Bob. If it weren't for Bob Kramer, I wouldn't be here. So thanks.
Oh, amazing.
Thanks, Bob. If he walks by, we have to pull him in. the multi-generation or intergenerational housing. I think intergenerational, more programmatic. So you have, elders reading to children in schools, or you have the daycare centers and senior housing. I think that's more intergenerational, but multi-generation living seems to be what I hear. But who knows? I mean, maybe we just need to make up a word because there are no real rules right now. Mm-hmm. And so I've been interested in multi-generation living since I accidentally landed in this space. Okay. About 9 years ago. My first company was a concierge service. We worked with elders in their homes, and I hired a lot of graduate school students in Colorado because we had a big millennial migration to fulfill the services for our clients. And had a mentor who was in senior housing, and I just remember always thinking of senior housing as like, it never felt natural, right? It always felt forced. I had a great grandmother who lived in senior housing, and visiting her never really felt, and it was a nice community, but something was always off. It was like missing a soul, I guess, you will. And it just felt almost like a home for the useless in a way, right? I think elders need to have younger people so they can pass on their legacy and their wisdom and their experiences so that they're relevant and they matter again. So that's why multi-generation living to me makes more sense than just putting a bunch of old people with a bunch of old people, which we know baby boomers don't want anyways. So that's why I think timing is getting closer for things like this, is the baby boomers will demand different housing models. So either we build it or someone else will, is what I think will happen.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about this film tour you've been on. You've been overseas for at least a month, right?
So 6.5 weeks, the end of 2017, and just a couple weeks before Nick.
Okay. So tell me some of the things when I've heard you say, we've talked about intergenerational, multi-generational. It's a relatively new concept to us here in North America and the States, but other countries are doing this and doing it pretty well, wouldn't you say? And I'm interested to hear what you're learning and what you think we can bring back to the States, because I think from what I've heard from you kind of off the podcast when we've been discussing, is a lot of, in Europe, it's government subsidized and things like that. Here in the States, what do you see are some implications that we can bring back in the private pay housing sector?
Right. So I think one way to look at this is this could be a recruitment tool as well. So think about having students live in your communities and you have them and they're sharing it with other people that they're going to school with. So this could be something that's also connected to the HR budget as well. But there, you have to fulfill services in your communities anyway. So if students need a place to live, right? And they a lot of times want to have less student loan debt or other things. So I think there's a way to target not just universities, because sometimes I've consulted with universities. They're hard to work with. I mean, very bureaucratic. Things take forever. They're not on the same timeline that, some of us in the business world are. So universities, I think, long-term are a good play, but it also community colleges and like strategic locations next to community colleges where students are, probably working jobs, or they're a little bit more, have some more real life responsibilities, or more practical in some ways. I think that is something that we haven't really tapped into. So I think students living in communities is probably really kind of the low hanging fruit. And then there are crazy things like in Puerto Rico, you've got, I think, a couple billion, $1.5 billion in HUD funding that's now going down there to rebuild Puerto Rico. Mm. And in Puerto Rico, you talk to millennials down there, and 1 out of 3 of them were raised by their grandparents. And it's because their parents had to go somewhere else to find work, or, there are just different things. So you know, that's one place that you can pilot things, that you might also be able to tap into some HUD funding that's available. Now, how you navigate the government down there, that's, I have friends that do that if you need help, but there's, that would be one example of a place to try that I think needs to be rebuilt anyway, and there's an incentive for people to do this.
Is that why Puerto Rico has caught your attention for what you just said?
Yeah, so this, I go back on Sunday, and it'll be the, and this is what, the beginning of March. It'll be the third time I've been there this year. So Puerto Rico, to me, is pretty fascinating because
so
of that.
Go back, because you touched on something that I've heard so much this week as we're talking with operators, and I've heard, you know, here you've got lenders, you've got equity providers, you've got construction companies, you've got operators, but everybody, when you ask them, what's the number one challenge you're facing right now in your community, everybody's saying labor, and you touched on that. So help me understand, you know, you're saying that you believe, if I heard you right, that you think this could probably help offset some of the labor challenges. The next question, playing devil's advocate here, is what would you say to an operator who's thinking, okay, how would this work? And is an older person going to be okay with a college-age student living beside of them? Have you seen that work? Is it working in other places? And how is it working?
Sure. It's. I'll give you the most probably... Honestly, probably the most well-known example is in the Netherlands, and it's this place called Humanitas, and that's one of the places I visited, I think it was September 2017, and there are students that live in a retirement community, and basically what I said, they are staff, so they're on shift for dinner or cleanup, you know, they do different things around the community. The woman who runs it is brilliant. She just went ahead and did it. There are a lot of regulations in the Netherlands, and she's a bit of a rebel and did it, and then asked for forgiveness. And the, you know, luckily, the licensor folks were okay with what she was doing and want to learn from her now. So they let her experiment a little bit, and then they learn from her because they see it as being so successful. They want to keep pursuing this. It's funny because she talks about it, and you have students that have these vibrant, interesting lives, and they're dating, and they're going to school, and so the residents are part of that now. So it's like they're almost at a life stage where they're reminiscing. They're not just reminiscing. They're sharing these stories and experiences with them, right? So even if they come home, because it's the Netherlands, they go a little bit, you know. They come back at like 4 a.m. after being out with their friends. And sometimes if they're up, they'll have a conversation. I mean, it's a totally, you wouldn't expect it, right? And they just look out for each other. So it's different from, I think, the way sometimes maybe we think of it here is like, oh, you don't want your grandmother to know about your dating life. But they're buddies, right? So it's totally, it's different when it's not your relative. And that's kind of what we found with the concierge service I had. You know, I was always a little bit hesitant about hiring students to work with elders, but we had one client who was just adamant about not working with anyone over my age, which is illegal for me to hire, right? So I couldn't totally follow that, but she's very serious. So so we did that, and I never really understood it until I realized that her experience with this younger person was relevant because she was at a life stage where she was going to school and had a serious relationship and thinking about getting married and moving back home and all of these things. So her life experience was really valuable.
Yeah. So another thing I just picked up on, and I almost had to chuckle a little bit, because you talked about in the Netherlands and you mentioned highly regulated. So I wouldn't have imagined that, first of all. But second of all, I think most of us that are in the senior housing space agree it's becoming a highly regulated industry, and one of the challenges we have nationally, especially operators, people that are involved in multiple states, is every state is regulated differently, right? And so there's no federal guidelines other than at the life safety code level, so there's all these different state agencies that are regulating most of senior living. So when you talk about, I loved that the she was kind of a rebel, right? Which I want to make sure, Lucas, our listeners, we are not endorsing be a rebel. But
I might be.
Yeah, she Amanda might be. But I will say I love that the authority, the regulatory agency, actually said, hey, let's take a step back. Let's
right.
learn
let's
from
use
this.
Our brains.
Yeah, let's what can we learn from this rather than just smacking on the wrist, doing things as we've always done it? Well, maybe that's not always reality in the states that we operate in. So what are some ideas that you might have for as an industry, as stakeholders, whatever level we are, to kind of rally around this theme and to, I would say, influence and educate the regulatory agencies to help be lax or create models where intergenerational and multigenerational can even occur? Because I think that is a restraint that we have in the U.S. is a highly regulated environment.
Oh, it's a huge problem. I mean, I've had to deal with regulations as well, both on the operations side and in tech, and it's a nightmare, especially the FDA. So hopefully that gets cleaned up a little bit. But there are some ways to do it, and that's where I think film can come in again. If you can, so what I'm working on now is filming these intergenerational programs or multi-generation communities, so that you can show people, because I think there's a difference between show and tell. And if we make it more immersive so they can experience it and they see, you know, you can break down some of those fear-based issues, I think that helps quite a bit. So, I mean, it's an experiment. Film is one thing to try. There's also, can you get students involved in this? And then can you go mainstream and do like a change.org, you know, type of petition and just petition these? But you've got to do it as a cohort, as a group, and you've got to get it out there. And that's something that it will take investment and possibly financial investment, but definitely effort and time.
So, you know, I think it would be good, Lucas, to take a few minutes and talk about specifically, I know you are working on some things because it's a passion project, you're raising money. Bring us into this journey of kind of where you started from and where you hope to get to, what you hope to deliver and achieve by the films, the virtual reality, the different things, and kind of the cost involved in that and how you're going about trying to raise support. Because I know for myself, you know, I'm a cheerleader for you. I think a lot of people, we've even been with you some today, and I think you've got a lot of fans and people wanting to get behind someone that's the torchbearer for this and in it for the right reasons. I wholeheartedly support you. So just tell us about the journey, where we're trying to get to.
Okay, so this started for me, this passion project started about 4 years ago. So it wasn't called Connect the Ages back then. It was a series of experiments. I knew workforce was an issue. I also knew that I believe our older generation, our oldest generation, is our biggest wasted natural resource. So how do we tap into that? And what makes that resource valuable is when they're connected to younger generations. And that's what we used to have, but through single family homes and being less, you know, having less agriculture, where when mom and dad would work out in the farm, the kids would be with grandmother learning. Things have changed quite a bit. So how do we get back to what's natural to us? Because I think younger people are also very isolated. So you have very isolated bookend generations where everyone's trying to make them an adult, right? A kid is a kid, an elder is an elder, but we're trying to make everyone an adult. And I think that's really hurting our country and our world. So if we can get back to those more natural relationships where elders are more patient and they're teaching and they're reminiscing and kids are asking for stories, it's almost like, you know, they fit together perfectly, but we're not really doing that. So I think for me, stories was also important because my grandfather had dementia and he would naturally reminisce, and that's how he was able to contribute to us. So I think the storytelling piece is super important in all of this. And stories are also, when we interviewed people, we were working on a project last year with Nick, so Bob Kramer and Leading Age and some folks from Argentum. And we created this little film project where we interviewed over 50 people and who work in senior living, who were anything from, you know, nurses to operators to investors, architects. And what got everyone into this space, almost everyone got into this space by happenstance, right? Mm-hmm. So no one, except for one or two people out of over 50 people, chose to come into the space, usually because they had a family member that worked in the industry. But the rest of them stay, like, the soul of their work, their why, always the stories of the elders, right? It's like, oh, I talked to this and I hear, I mean, they're just incredible people. And they were, you know, so I think stories is super important. So that's why focusing on film and getting these incredible stories is so important to me. Then when the first pilot project we did a few years ago with this was with high school students, where there was a high suicide rate in Boulder and a retirement community in Boulder. It was kind of isolated, a lot of high net worth individuals, so they were very protective of their residents. And I had actually worked there when I was younger on accident. I thought I was interviewing at a restaurant, and I show up and I'm like, where is this place? And if it weren't for the recession, I wouldn't have taken the job, honestly. So that pilot project was so amazing. We had students record the stories of elders, of the residents, and we put them in groups of 2 to 3 students, because we had more students sign up than we had space, than we had elders. And, you know, they met 3 times, about 2 hours each time, every other Sunday for a few weeks. And then at the end recorded the stories. But the thing that surprised me was the students were teaching them how to communicate with their grandchildren. So they were teaching them how to text. They stayed in touch afterwards and had dinner. It's basically like they built in a grandparent-grandchild relationship without that being in any of the curriculum, right? It's just, let's get to know each other, record a story. But they took it naturally to that next step. So I knew he had something really important there. And so this, now what I'm doing is filming stories around the world, kind of like this Anthony Bourdain of longevity or wisdom, because travel's really interesting to younger people. Mm-hmm. I think culture also is. So, but people are people, right? That's kind of what I've been finding in these different places, is you have different traditions and different food and different music. But really, at the end of the day, people want to connect and engage with other people. And so that's what I think is really fascinating about these stories. And with that, there's just so much that can be done. So creating example videos around the world. I was in 10 different countries in Europe in the fall. And then this last trip, I went back to Sardinia, because there's so much there. There's so much there. They're naturally more intergenerational. And there, it's really interesting, because you have stories like, you have stories of a band, a rock band that only sings in Sardinian, because they're trying to preserve their culture and tradition, right? And that they're not, because of that, the likelihood that they'll go mainstream is super low. But it's a really interest. But they're like very passionate about hanging on to that, and it actually might be the thing that makes them go mainstream. It's really interesting. And then you've got fashion designers that are bringing back these old traditional dresses into new modern wedding dresses, so you can see the stitch lines, or, you know, and the fabric they use. So they're hanging on to it, and it's almost like becoming this retro trend, right? So can older people be our, like, retro trend? Can their experiences be that? So creating these example videos and this content, doing like a pilot series, a mini pilot series, in 3 different places, I believe. So looking at Puerto Rico as one place, and then also Sardinia, and then Israel, because I think the Jewish culture is so amazing at passing down stories, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, right. So amazing. It's something I've been fascinated by since I was a kid, so it's been really neat to actually experience that. Mm-hmm. And you know, going from there, and then creating some virtual reality little vignettes or little experiences because if virtual reality takes off, we'll have the content ready, because content is the one thing it's really lacking right now. So if we can get them content that is highlighting really interesting older people that can teach them and add value to their lives, I think that's great. The project's been, again, I'm an entrepreneur, so it's an experiment and I take on the risk. Sometimes a client, for example, is AARP, so I've been working on some separate pilot projects with them, and we'll see how that works out, if that takes off. But at least that's kind of letting me break even with this experiment right now, so thank you, AARP. And so I think funding, you look at these projects, you can really, if we were to do an eight series program, we'd need, just to get it off the ground for season one, it depends. If you do Amazon, that's a little bit different than if you do like a Discovery or CNN or something. So, or Travel Channel. I think there are so many different avenues. And then social's huge. Social's you, Lucas, is the social media expert.
The senior living fan. Yes.
It's a great channel. Yeah. I think that's going to be huge for you. So I don't want to interrupt.
Speaking of social and your platform, a lot of people, I think, are going to want to follow your journey. They're going to want to find out how they can contribute. So tell us. I've seen all your social. Tell people how they keep up with you. How, if they want to support what you're doing, how are they going to keep track with you?
Sure. So I think I'm trying to figure out how to make this not just sustainable, but something that can keep growing, right? So looking at different ways to finance more film, because you've got to editing is the big piece that I struggle with. So hiring really amazing editors, so we can keep moving instead of, stop and go and stop and go, and we get funding. So sponsorship for content would be amazing if anyone's up for that. That would just help us, really get moving with it. And then as far as engagement goes, I've got at Connect the Ages or at Amanda Cavallari, and then just feel free to reach out to me anytime if I can be helpful as well. And then what I really would love to do is build out that storytelling concept I told you all about, to really scale that out. So you've got to build a pretty decent back end on that, and then to partner with senior living communities and schools, educators, to get students in to record these stories. And I think that's another tool to build interest in multi-generation living and workforce development. So hopefully that's kind of building the workforce funnel in a way.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So Bridge the Gap, obviously our mission is to inform, educate, and influence our industry. This is definitely bridging one of those gaps, right? And so we'll be putting up your social so people can reach out to you, be engaged with what you're doing with Connect the Ages. Senior Living fan, tell me, what are you thinking?
Well, my head is spinning, and pretty much I want Amanda to succeed so bad. and I think that she's, I think that this is a real winning venture that it really can truly impact the industry that we love. And it's like, why do we do what we do? Well, there's a lot of complicated factors. There's money, there's real estate, there's operations, there's this, there's that. All of it affects the end user, which are, like you said, to your point, just a very precious aspect of our culture and population, that there's just still so much there that has so much value and dignity that I think is, for the most part, and given our conversations, being underutilized. And so I would just ask that for the people that are listening to this and that want more information, that they don't wait too long and they don't sit and contemplate. They reach out to us at Bridge the Gap, reach out to Amanda, and figure out ways that you have to contribute. We're sitting at a conference full of heavy hitting decision makers. Like, the people under this roof right now could 100x totally, you know, make this thing the biggest thing on the planet. And so I would think that there'd be a handful of listeners and a handful of people in this industry that would say, you know what, that really resonates with me. And I want to be a part of creating a legacy, not just a job, not just, you know, a career for themselves, but figuring out a way to take their talents to partner up with people like Amanda that are really doing something that's going to benefit our senior population, but full circle all of the generations, all of the people that are involved in this. So that's what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah. So, you know, for our listeners, obviously, we will be populating on all of Bridge the Gap's social media. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I don't even know what all we're on. We're on a lot of stuff.
Yes. YouTube.
Yeah.
Subscribe YouTube. To
YouTube. Yes, subscribe to YouTube. But be looking for information. We will populate and be tweeting and be reposting Amanda's stuff. Make sure you reach out to her, follow her journey. And find out how you can support it. You got to dig in and make it happen. So it's been an awesome episode. Thank you for joining us. Always want you to come back whenever you can. So thanks for your time. Lucas, in closing.
It's been a fantastic effort. I think right now we're pretty thirsty.
Yeah.
We're going to go hit the bar.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. So yeah. I'm looking forward to finishing out a great conference. And so it's been a great episode on Bridge the Gap. And we just encourage you to continue to engage with us online. Rate and review, share and subscribe. And catch us next time.
See you.